That's John Lennon with Gimme Some Truth. It's his 1971 protest against governmental, political, and corporate hypocrisy, wrongdoing, and cover-ups. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today, Feeding Us Lies, the roundup on agri-giant Monsanto. On its website, agribusiness giant Monsanto touts Roundup, a herbicide and pesticide product it developed in 1974 and in varying formulations used by farmers, landowners, homeowners, and parks departments all over the world as, quote, important tools in their toolboxes for controlling weeds, unquote. The key active ingredient in Roundup and Roundup-based products is glyphosate, developed by Monsanto in 1970. Monsanto and several companies in China now dominate the production of glyphosate, now the largest selling agrochemical product worldwide, commanding 25% of the market, and with a forecast at 1.35 million metric tons of production by 2017. For years, Monsanto has been dogged by questions about the safety of glyphosate for humans, animals, and the environment, and for years, the company has denied or dismissed claims of its products' links to a range of serious side effects, including birth defects, cancer, autism, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, kidney disease, wildlife and aquatic abnormalities and death, and even the deaths of butterflies and bees. But new information has come to light that shows Monsanto not only knew of the biochemical hazards of glyphosate, but did not reveal the results of its own studies that corroborated several scientific challenges to its product. Dr. Gary Null, who broke the story on PRN's The Gary Null Show, is with us, and we will be joined also by a leading scientist researcher who unearthed and examined Monsanto's secret reports, and they will discuss what was found. So welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Therese. My pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. I learned of the story, of course, on your program, and that day that you broke the story last week was just riveting radio, and the kind of radio that is what PRN is all about, which is to inform people about the issues that we're dealing with every day. This happens to have been a long-standing issue that you and others in the field have been reporting on. Could you give us a synopsis of what your show revealed last week?
Yes, but we have to step back and not start with last week's show, but rather look back at a long legacy of products that Monsanto has brought to us, including DDT, and Agent Orange, and many of the toxins that have been of a controversial nature and have been shown to have injured or killed people, and the lawsuits they have settled. But then you come forward and you ask a basic question. Are genetically engineered foods safe? We are told by the USDA, by the FDA, and by most of the major scientific organizations, yes, they are. There is an assumption that they're safe because they've been tested, long-term human studies showing that there's no adverse effect. And then you start looking in the scientific literature that is generally available based upon what the manufacturers, not just Monsanto, but DuPont, Syngenta, Bayer, have also been involved with genetically engineered foods. And you see that their studies are the ones that we're relying upon. All right. Can they be trusted? Well, they have a long history of not being trustable. So then we went ahead and produced a series of articles and a documentary, a multi-award-winning documentary called Seeds of Death, and anyone in the audience can watch free of charge up on YouTube, Gary Null YouTube. And we interviewed scientists from around the world. And the scientists, we flew over to India to interview Vandana Shiva, one of the leading experts in the world and the leading anti-GMO person in India. In fact, she has a large farm where she is showing classes of students how to grow organically and sustainably. And then we went up to Canada, interviewed the people up there who had been fighting Monsanto, and some scientists, Dr. Chopra up there, and Jeffrey Smith and at least 30 other people we filmed, all said the same thing, that we should have the right to know if we're eating genetically engineered foods. Therefore, we could say yes or no. We want or don't want to use the food. And while this was going on, there was a movement in California, Washington, Oregon, and Colorado, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and one other state, Vermont, to label GMOs. And Monsanto, along with the Grocery Manufacturers Association and other big agribusinesses, threw tens of millions of dollars in television ads trying to scare the American public that we didn't need to label GMOs. And as a result, we saw as many as 90% of the people in California be anti-GMOs, wanting labeling. But by the time the referendum came along, they actually voted against labeling genetically engineered foods. That's how effective their propaganda machine is. So you're dealing with people who are very smart, very wealthy. They have unlimited amounts of resources they can put into stopping or defeating any legislation that might allow people freedom of choice. Because right now, if you're eating a hamburger, you don't know whether or not the soybeans or the corn that were fed to the cattle were genetically engineered. You don't know if the milk you're eating or drinking and the cheese, whether it was made from genetically engineered bovine growth stimulating hormone. You don't know. And unless you're buying certified organic. So that's where we were up to. And the two scientists, two leading independent scientists, one in Scotland, who had a whole group test whether or not GMO foods were safe, declared that they were not. And then there was a doctor in France with a whole team, and Dr. Cerellini, and he found that later in the life of the rats, fed genetically engineered versus non-genetically engineered food, that those that were fed the genetically engineered food, including the Roundup of glyphosate, developed tumors, renal tumors and other cancers. And I had this in my film showing these massive cancers in these rats. Here was the issue. When we went back and looked at the American studies, they generally were 90-day studies, 3 months. But in Cerellini and the Scottish scientists, the tumors occurred later. So we know that not all cancer is shown in a short period of time. Then the question arose, did Monsanto know this? Did any of the other GMO companies know that their products could cause any adverse effects later in the life of the rat? And we could never get the answers. So it was at a stalemate. We believed err on the side of caution and to trust Cerellini, and Cerellini was attacked, his reputation was attacked, and the whole effort was to try to destroy the messenger so the message wouldn't be acceptable. And then along comes Anthony Samsel, S-A-M-S-E-L, who is an independent research scientist. He also worked with Arthur D. Little, that does a lot of research, and also with the U.S. EPA. And he focuses on independent research in the adverse risks of agricultural chemicals, particularly Monsanto's glyphosate, or Roundup. And he published his findings in collaboration with a woman we had on the program with him, Dr. Stephanie Seneff of MIT. She holds 4 degrees from MIT. And they both stated that, yes, there was a correlation. They believe that there's a correlation between Monsanto's glyphosate, which is ubiquitous in our environment because it's been sprayed so much, and cancer. And they collaborated on 3 peer-reviewed scientific papers published in the journal Entropy on the Roundup cancer relationship, and a 4th paper to be published this month. Now, here's what made it unique. Do you remember the movie The Insider where Al Pacino played Mike Wallace's part, and there was a character actor who played a person who'd worked with one of the tobacco industry firms, and he brought four documents showing, yes, the tobacco industry knew that there were addictive substances, chemicals in tobacco. And yet just before that, all seven top heads of the tobacco industry had sworn before Congress they didn't know anything about any addictive substances. Well, he managed to get those documents, which became congressional hearings, and then a $230 billion lawsuit was settled by the tobacco industry, but they paid that over 25 years, to reimburse Medicaid. And so it exposed the whole industry. Now, what we later found out was that the FDA knew all along that tobacco could cause cancer and could be addictive, but were holding it in secret as a proprietary right of the manufacturer. So think of it this way. Members of the U.S. scientific community, including the FDA and Health and Human Resources, knew for decades that smoking cigarettes could contribute to disease and addictive behavior. Yet the proprietary economic interest of the big tobacco industry was more relevant than the millions of lives that were lost from cancer and emphysema. Those lives were considered expendable, but challenging the profit by revealing what the tobacco industry knew and the government knew was considered so sacrosanct you couldn't touch it. So along comes Anthony, and he manages, through a great deal of scholarship and determination, to get all of these articles that were relevant for Monsanto that none of us had ever seen before, including long-term studies. Now, mind you, we didn't know there were long-term studies. So the significance is that he found long-term studies done by Monsanto that showed adverse effects, including cancer in multiple organs of the animals' bodies. These were never published. They were held secret. But the government knew, and Monsanto knew. So the question is this like The Insider, played by Russell Crowe in the movie The Insider? And in my opinion, it is yes, except it is even more relevant because not every American smoked, but almost every American has pesticides in their body, including almost every mother has breast milk that has glyphosate residues in it. So we're all exposed to pesticides because of aerial spraying. And the fact that we weren't told that it was on all these products, nor we were told these products posed a risk. So a whole nation has been exposed to glyphosate. So to know that any study, even one study that was done internally, showed negative effects, in my personal opinion, represents an unethical decision to withhold that from the scientific community and from the American public. And therefore, I'm asking for an independent investigator and congressional hearings where, under oath, all of these scientists and people with Monsanto going clear back to the beginning of this would be brought forward. And just like the tobacco industry, told, you're under oath, you lie now, you could go to jail, and watch the people come forward, the whistleblowers inside Monsanto, and tell the truth or face the consequences. And then I believe that the American public would see how dangerous it is. So it was a historic program. And we're following it up with an article that will be out the next day or two, and it will challenge Monsanto. But remember, Monsanto's extremely aggressive. They have a terrible reputation for going after anyone that exposes or challenges them. So we're looking for a major fight with Monsanto, and we're prepared, and we have our own team of lawyers, and we have the facts, and we have the truth on our side. So we're waiting for those congressional hearings. We're waiting for the class action lawsuits to occur. Does that answer your question? Utrice?
Yes, I'm hearing you. Okay. It does answer the question, and it gives me the great opportunity to introduce Dr. Anthony Samsell. And I heard you first on Gary's program, and it was very, very riveting what you had to say. But could I ask you first to tell us about this compound? What is the chemical makeup of this compound? How does it work in the field? How widely is it used?
First, thank you for inviting me to speak with you on your program today.
Thank you for being here.
Glyphosate, the chemical name for glyphosate is phosphonamethylglycine. It's an organic compound that was originally found to chelate minerals. Virtually all the elements of the periodic table, glyphosate can chelate. It acts like a magnet, and it bonds with metals and metalloids, ties them up so that they're unavailable. It was originally used to clean boilers and pipes for the mineral deposits. It's also been used in the mining industry. It even chelates uranium in some of the extraction procedures that are done now, fluid extraction of minerals. Glyphosate can be used to chelate many, many elements. Then comes along Monsanto in the 70s and finds that this stuff kills plants. And they patented it as an herbicide. Originally, it was available as the acid glyphosate. The phosphonamethylglycine is an acid. Later, they reacted it with isopropyl alcohol. They made an isopropyl amine salt of it. They made a potassium salt of it. They made many different salts of it to use as a safer herbicide so that they could up the concentration of the active ingredient in the herbicide that they were selling. They were able to get higher volume to dissolve in water and solvents to disperse in tank mixes. So that's basically what glyphosate is.
How widely is it used, and how serious a problem does it pose?
It's the most widely used herbicide on the planet. It's far ahead of atrazine or 2,4-D or some of the other common herbicides. It's used not just with genetically engineered crops. 90% of our corn, soy, in this country is genetically engineered to withstand the application of glyphosate. It's been genetically engineered to resist its effects so that the genetically engineered crop continues to live while the weeds die. I mean, from a product development standpoint, it was a pretty slick and ingenious way to save time and labor in agriculture. The product developers didn't look at the long-term consequences of low levels of glyphosate and what these things do to biology. They didn't understand at the time about bacteria and that our microbiota comprise about 70% or more of our immune system, and that glyphosate is an herbicide just like 2,4-D or 2,4,5-T or atrazine. It kills plants. And our microbiota are like plants in our biology, and it kills sensitive species. So There were a lot of things that weren't considered and weren't known back in the 70s when they brought this stuff to market that we know now.
But isn't Monsanto, as a developer of this product, isn't it required by law to report the findings that it has on that would be negative in terms of its application and the effect it would have on millions and millions and millions of people? Isn't it required by law to do that?
Yes, and periodic updates are required as well, and that's why the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has review periods every 10 years or so to review chemicals that are being used in the marketplace to see if there are any changes or any new science that has been discovered that might affect the registration of the compound. Glyphosate went through a peer review process just like any other chemical does with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. I firmly believe that that peer review process was violated because the studies that Monsanto did and hired private contractors to do, they had the U.S. EPA seal the data so that it couldn't be revisited by scientists during the peer review, the product review process, and or by the public during the for the public comment period. Everything that that is considered by the EPA before it's finally approved is allowed a period of public comment. That period of public comment was actually violated by not letting the public actually review the documents that the Environmental Protection Agency considered.
But
and
you
there were
and Dr. Stephanie
and
Seneff,
pages of those.
You and Dr. Stephanie Seneff have reviewed some of these documents. You've retrieved some of these documents. What have you found?
Okay, I've retrieved multiple studies representing over 15,000 pages, between 15 and 20,000 pages. I lost count. What I initially found was that Monsanto did studies in many different types of animals and organisms. And they did long-term studies. And prior to that, we didn't really know that that Monsanto did multiple long-term studies of 2 years plus in mice and rats. They tested glyphosate in mice, in rats, beagle dogs, rabbits, and other lower life forms.
And what did they find?
Well, what they found was that that glyphosate caused various types of diseases in the animals, in the mice, and in the rats. They found that glyphosate affected every gland and virtually every organ, including the skin, the eyes, to varying degrees, producing tissue destruction. The organ would lose weight. They would weigh the organs during the experiments. Some animals were sacrificed early. Some died during the experiment, and others were terminally sacrificed at the end of the experiment after the full 2 years. In some cases, like the Lankus and Hogan study of 1981, that was a study that was done in rats, long-term study in rats, and that lasted for like 26 months. They found significant incidents of damage to the glands and organs. It disrupted the pituitary gland, the thyroid gland, the adrenal glands. It even disrupted the thymus gland. And we know that the thymus gland is necessary That's where our T cells and helper cells that are made in the in our bone marrow, they go to the thymus gland, and that's where they mature. And from there, you know, they're on the ready to defend us against invaders.
So this product Roundup has been shown by the maker of Roundup, one of the chief producers of glyphosate, to have had negative effects, in some cases fatal effects, in rats and mice and other animals. And the implication is that the same probably is being experienced by human beings exposed to glyphosate.
That's correct. When Monsanto did the studies, the earlier studies were done at lower levels of concentration of glyphosate fed to the animals. They were the first rat studies were done with doses of 3, 10, and 30 milligrams per kilogram of body weight of the animal, and what the disease that they observed. They negated all the findings by bringing in historical controls, sometimes 3, 5, 7, 11, 15 different unrelated historical controls, to negate the findings that they discovered, the effects that glyphosate had. They dismissed everything and said, oh, well, you know, in another study back 5 or 10 years ago, we saw the control animals developed these kind of adenomas and carcinomas of the pituitary or the lung or the stomach, the kidney, the testes. And they just brought in as many historical control studies as needed to negate whatever the finding was. And they did that consistently with every study.
Well, when I looked at Monsanto's webpage, it directly addressed some of these concerns, and in each case denied any link to these questions, such as, is glyphosate safe for humans and the environment? Are Roundup and glyphosate the same? Is Monsanto the sole manufacturer of glyphosate-based herbicides? Does glyphosate cause cancer? Does it account for the accumulation in milk from either humans or farm animals? Does glyphosate cause autism? Does glyphosate cause a problem with urine? Does glyphosate cause chronic kidney disease and Parkinson's disease and celiac disease and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma? Does it disrupt endocrine systems or act as a hormone? Does it alter human DNA? To all these questions, Monsanto has said, no, it doesn't do any of these things, and it is basically a safe product when used as directed. So the implication here on a legal level is, if anything untoward is linked to the use of glyphosate, A, it is quite possible it's not being used as directed, and B, it is also possible that the so-called studies that back up claims against glyphosate, it is quite possible that those studies have been subjected to rigorous tests by Monsanto and independent agencies and were found to be lacking in merit.
Okay, let me say that everything that they claim is a bunch of baloney. Everything that they claim, their legal department cannot let them admit to anything. It's like the tobacco companies. It's like DuPont with Teflon and the perfluorooctanoic acids that were released into the environment down in Maryland and all those communities that were exposed to DuPont's products. Their attorneys will consistently deny that a product has any kind of deleterious effect. That's the only position that they can take, because if they took another position, they open themselves up to be ripped wide open by the legal system. So they will continue to deny. They will continue to retain consultants to say that their products are safe. Even the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency had Monsanto go back and revisit various tests and do more testing. The EPA had them do another long-term rat study in 1990. However, when they did that rat study, they used very high doses compared to the earlier studies. Monsanto was pretty slick. What they found is that at the low dose, they had a significant amount of hits of incidents of disease in glands and organs. When they went to the higher doses, they saw perhaps less incidents, so they stuck to the higher doses. Well, glyphosate is an endocrine-disrupting chemical, and it behaves differently at low doses. At low doses, glyphosate is a hormone. It regulates genes up and down. In E. coli bacteria, just as one example, glyphosate was found to regulate 1,040 genes, both up-regulated and down-regulated. It does the same thing to other bacteria. And what happens when these genes are regulated up and down in bacteria? Well, it causes the organism to produce different biomolecules. So what the organism might be producing that's beneficial, it could cause the organism to produce other biomolecules that are not as beneficial. Our bacteria are responsible for producing our vitamins, fatty acids. They make all kinds of biomolecules that that keep us healthy. Glyphosate, as I said, works as a hormone in gene regulation. It's a mimetic of glycine, it regulates many genes in bacteria and even influences our own genes. It disrupts our CYP450 enzymes. Those enzymes are important in gene regulation. It destroys the heme center, which is primarily iron, it releases free iron into our bloodstream, increases our iron levels. It also bioaccumulates. Monsanto said that that glyphosate doesn't bioaccumulate. Well, what they found in their studies was that between 30 to 35% of glyphosate was well retained in the animals. The balance was passed in the feces and the urine, but 30 to 35% was retained depending on whether they were male or female animals from 7 to 14 days was the radio-labeled half-life. So that means that glyphosate could essentially hang around the beta radiation, stayed the longest. So glyphosate could essentially be in your biology from one meal for about a month, anywhere from 2 weeks to a month. So that's a long time for it to hang around in your biology. Now, not all of it was bioaccumulated. They found that between 1% to 2% bioaccumulated, and that was with one meal. That was with one 10-milligram dose. They went through and they looked at the radio-labeled carbon-14 glyphosate that they fed to seven different groups of rats, and also they looked at the intravenous route of exposure. They found that glyphosate bioaccumulated primarily in the bone and bone marrow, they actually measured and produced an average of parts per million that was found in the blood, the blood plasma, the red cells, the liver, the eye, the brain, kidney, spleen, lung, heart, thyroid, testes, ovaries, uterus, nasal mucosa, stomach, small intestine, colon, the bone marrow, the abdominal muscle, shoulder muscle, abdominal fat, the tail, and the residual carcass. They left out the pancreas. There wasn't any information on how much was retained in the pancreas, and I think they deliberately left that out because maybe it was pretty high.
Now, what you've just given us a litany of really bad news. One could, it's hard to believe that other countries are not concerned about this or don't know about it or aren't fighting it. Is it in fact the case that, that we're not getting resistance to the use, the pervasive and global use of glyphosate?
Well, they're saying that glyphosate is safe based on animal studies where they fed higher doses to the animals than what they did in the earliest studies. The lowest dose that they fed animals was like 3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight. That study of 3, 10, and 30 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, those were the lowest doses ever fed. But more recently, over the past 5 years, 10 years or so, there have been numerous other studies that have looked at extremely low levels of glyphosate and found that glyphosate causes biochemical changes in the parts per trillion range. And the parts per trillion range, we can't even measure with our common HPLC procedures. Most labs aren't equipped to go that low. You know, we go down to maybe 3 to 5 parts per billion, but when you get in the parts per trillion range, you have to be pretty good to get down that low.
I want to ask one question before I go to Gary again. I've looked about this relationship now. It's Roundup and Roundup-based products pioneered by Monsanto. It seems to have multiplied. There are many companies now, many of them based in China, producing glyphosate and distributing it. And the prediction is by industry experts that 1.3 million metric tons will be produced by the year 2017. And when I look at how populations are growing, the biggest growth in populations will be in developing countries. And one can't help but make the correlation that there might just be a targeting of these countries by this Monsanto and the cabal that is producing and distributing glyphosate, despite the harmful effects. Would that be a paranoid thing to say, or is there a pattern that you saw also in terms of distribution of glyphosate?
No, there isn't a conspiracy to use this stuff to reduce the population. It's just plain greed. It's marketing. I mean, we're dealing with a chemical company that makes a chemical and is going to market it and sell it in as many avenues as possible. And right now, Monsanto continues to use the U.S. State Department as its marketing arm in foreign countries. They're targeting Africa right now, and they're trying to get as many African nations on board to use this stuff to expand the use of genetically engineered crops. Remember, glyphosate is only with genetically engineered crops, it's part of a two-part system. You've got the seeds and the plants that are genetically engineered to accept the glyphosate and continue living while the weeds die, and you've got the chemical herbicide itself, which is not just glyphosate, the active ingredient, but it's got other adjuvants that make it even more toxic. The chemical's not just used on genetically engineered crops, but it's also used on about 160 other food crop groups, like wheat and beans and peas and rice, and it's used around fruit trees and orchards and around almond trees and in the almond groves, and glyphosate gets absorbed into the fruit and gets absorbed into the nuts. It gets absorbed into beans and peas that is sprayed on when they use it as a desiccant. On wheat, they do a pre-harvest burn down of the perennial weeds to save a step in the agricultural operation, and they go through prior to just before harvesting the wheat, and they spray with glyphosate. They use some other herbicides too, but that's to kill the perennial weeds. But these herbicides, particularly glyphosate, gets absorbed into the wheat, and then when they clean the wheat, it's not only in all the wheat products that we eat in this country, the pasta, the bread, cookies, cakes, whatever, but the scrap, the wheat middlings, goes into animal feed. I've analyzed animal feed. I analyzed just in the past couple of months Purina dog and cat chows. I just finished analyzing 9 different popular brands. Every single brand of cat and dog chow that or dog food that I analyzed had residues of glyphosate in it. It's the same with our food supply. I'm going on into our food supply now, and I'm analyzing glyphosate in popular foods, cereals, and pastas and breads and whatnot. All that information will be published at some point. But it's in virtually all foods of the Western diet. If it's not organic or not sprayed with glyphosate, it won't have it in it. But you can bet that 90% plus of the products on the shelf have glyphosate in them. I got the U.S. Department of Agriculture to release data on soy prior to me going to the U.S. Department of Agriculture to find out why they weren't testing for glyphosate and glufosinate in our food supply. There was no data. The USDA decided to release 1 year's worth of data. They tested glyphosate in soy. They found 90% plus of the soy samples tested had glyphosate and its metabolite AMPA. I was told that they did 400 samples, but when they released the data, they only released the data for 300 samples. And then when I looked at USDA's data, I saw that they had a higher incidence of AMPA, the metabolite, than they had of glyphosate. So it says to me that they cherry-picked the results. They probably left out the stuff that was over the EPA guidelines and just reported the 300 samples. But of the 300 samples, better than 90% of the soy that they tested was contaminated with glyphosate. So this
brings us to you, Gary. What is the best line of defense for a person now aware through Dr. Anthony Samsel about the preponderance of this harmful drug, this harmful compound in our foods? What's the best defense?
The only defense at this moment we have is to seek out certified organic produce or local produce where you have some assurance the person is not using organic, is not using pesticides. Now, not everything has to be labeled certified organic. In fact, that's a gimmick. I'm a certified organic farmer, which means that each year I have to pay thousands and thousands of dollars, even though I'm not growing anything, just teaching people. If you want it to be certified, they come by, they spend 20 minutes, they look at your sample, your soil, your water, your seeds, And you can show, yeah, you get your seeds, they're heirloom seeds, they're from seeds of change, and your soil's fine, and they don't see any chemicals, then you're certified. But what if you're the average farmer who has a small lot, wants to go to the farmer's market and sell things in season? You can't afford that. That's just way too expensive. And even though you're not using sprays, so what you have to do is develop some kind of a relationship with the person at the farmer's market to ask them, do you spray? What do you use a spray? Well, I use garlic and water with cayenne pepper, and it gets rid of the slugs and the beetles, etc. Okay, fine. Or then you have to rely upon certified organic. And so that's the first thing you can do. At least you know that it's not genetically engineered. Beyond that, we have to start working with the Organic Food Association and Ronnie Miller to be able to get national labeling and state labeling. Now, Monsanto and the others are going around the state because they're going to lose at the state level. But now they got a national law that is making its way through that if it passes, it doesn't matter what we've done at the state level. So if we passed a law saying we are requiring anything that has genetically engineered materials in it to be labeled, they could bypass that with a national law. So we're, because national supersedes state law. So we're trying to marshal a campaign against that. And the best way of doing it is to get the youth involved. Show them, where's your food come from? In fact, my newest film, Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time, just shows people where their food comes from. And you'll see one scene where there's a bunch of teenagers at a rock concert, and they were shown, you know, fried chicken and fish burger and steak and barbecue ribs. And then they were say, take a look for 60 seconds where this meat came from. And not one of them could watch it. They would start to watch and see how terrible the animals were treated, and they started crying, they turned their eyes away. But then that's the reality. That's what you're eating. It came from a living, sentient being. And 1/3 of all the fish caught in the world in the oceans are fed directly to livestock. And you start showing them the math that the amount of methane, which is far more toxic to our environment and problematic than CO2, carbon dioxide, 22 times more powerful, it comes from animals. There are currently over 65 billion animals in the world being grown for human consumption. So when you have that much being grown, they're going to spray it. They're going to spray it with glyphosate. So you're going to get genetically engineered soybeans sprayed with glyphosate, then that grain is sold to China and India and Brazilian farmers who then feed it to their livestock so that more people can have the American diet. In fact, about 20 years ago, diabetes was rare in India. Now it's epidemic. Same in China. It was rare to find diabetes, colon cancer. They had a longer lifespan than those in the United States. In fact, women in China and Japan that eat very little meat have a longer lifespan and are healthier and do not have all the symptoms women frequently suffer from in menopause because of how adulterated our bodies are because of all of the food that we put in from children who have adult diabetes by the time they're 6, arthritis by the time they're 10, heart disease by the time they're 13. In fact, this is the first generation in American history that will not live as long as their parents. So could you imagine the tragedy of parents bearing their children because of lifestyle, not genetics, not contagious diseases, not typhoid or cholera or smallpox, but because of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, high blood pressure? That's what's killing tens of millions of Americans. We're the fattest nation on the planet, and we have more children who are sick. So then you have to ask yourself, if you're a person that doesn't care what you eat, if you simply want to eat because you're hungry and you want something salty and crunchy or soft and sweet, are you going to care about a genetically engineered pesticide? Are you going to care about rat studies? Are you going to care about a corporation that hides the bad studies in the public view? In all probability, the answer is not. So then we're left with this phenomena of Know Your Friends, all movements, the civil rights movement, the feminist movement, the human rights movement, the anti-apartheid movement, all of these movements happen with about 1% of the population proactive, 1% or less. And we got out of Vietnam with less than 0.5% actually protesting it. So we should not confuse how few of us there are, because the empowered minority always, in every single instance, always guides the disempowered majority to a better place, even if they don't want to be in a better place. So it's not that you're out there, you know, fighting for to get something banned or get something labeled. What you're doing is you're out there doing any kind of social activism because it's the right thing for you personally to do. And there's a lot of people doing it. There are probably 5% of the American population now actively engaged. For example, for the first time in our history, we've hit about 5% who are vegetarian and of about 2% that are vegan. Those are 18 million people. 18 million people behind any issue in the United States. It's gonna get attention. It's going to get changed. So we have to get the youth. The young people are still idealistic enough that they're willing to vote with their hearts and process information at the heart level, not merely the intellectual level. In fact, the two largest environmental movements in the world were by teenagers. In America, one became incensed by seeing how young girls in India were abused by working until they were blind, weaving rugs. And the other was by a young boy who was incensed seeing how bricks were made by young boys. And because of their efforts, they each within a few years had millions of other people protesting. And the protests led to demonstrations and led to legislation, which then officially outlawed these practices and clamped down on those who were violating that in India. My brother caused the lead to get out of the gasoline in India and then get the kids who had lead exposure to be chelated. He did the same thing in Dominican Republic. In fact, he made sure that every single pregnant woman in the Dominican Republic had prenatal vitamins and preeclampsia and deformities, miscarriages, and stillbirths just dropped by a tremendous amount. So one person can make a difference if they're motivated and inspire other people. And the movement will come mainly from our youth, but guided at different levels by those who are older and more experienced and who've done the research. I see Anthony at the vanguard of this. I see him as going forward as the whistleblower, telling the world the truth, because they will not be able to silence him or Dr. Stephanie Seneff. They will not. They're not smarter than them. They're not able to out-credential them. Their academic backgrounds and pedigrees are impeccable. So you have to have those people who say it's not about he said, she said. We have hard evidence, their evidence. Here's what their study showed. Here's what they kept from the public. And then we have that is taken to a level where consumers say, why are we still allowing this product to be manufactured at all and spread around? And then you have the youth saying, why are we even eating all this meat that requires the rainforest to be torn down, to require soybeans to be grown, to require glyphosate to be sprayed? Why not just give up meat? So you have a group of individuals from different areas coming together to coalesce around the origins of our food, including the ground that it's grown in, what is sprayed on it, how it is processed, and what it ultimately means to our health. So I'm very optimistic that because of Anthony Semcel's work and Dr. Stephanie Seneff, we will have the beginning of a major movement challenging Monsanto.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Semcel, for being with us today and giving us a primer, you and Gary, a really incredibly detailed look at this dilemma. As we close, could you quickly tell us what's next in the fight for you?
Next is the publication of our new paper on glyphosate and cancer. It's our fourth paper. We've also begun working on a fifth paper which involves glyphosate as a cause of interstitial disease of the organs, particularly the pancreas and the lungs. The increase in COPD and lung-related disease can be directly linked to glyphosate's effect on the destruction of the organ. I just like to say that that no one talks about the metabolites of glyphosate. There are many metabolites other than the AMPA, the amino methyl phosphonic acid. There's a real hideous metabolite, and that's N-nitrosoglyphosate. We discussed that in the new paper. That metabolite alone causes cancer, and glyphosate can react in the body with the feces and with nitrous acid, oxides of nitrogen in your biology, and create this highly toxic N-nitrosoglyphosate, and that can lead to cancer and disease. So it's not just glyphosate. The metabolites of glyphosate are toxic, too. And we cover it in our new paper. Like I said, it's coming out later this month, and we're working on a fifth one.
And how can people learn more of your work?
You can find our papers at Entropy under Samsel and Seneff. If you type Samsel and Seneff Entropy or Samsel and Seneff, you'll find you can go to ResearchGate and type in my name. You'll come up with the papers that are published, and you can download them, read them. They're all free access, open and free access. Doesn't cost to buy them, to read them.
Thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you again for sharing your highly specialized information with the audience. And thank you too, Gary, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And that brings us to the end of our program. Keep it right here on PRN.FM. Coming up next, more great programming. And I hope to see you tomorrow. Until then, know that it is a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye. I'm sick to death of seeing